Nelson Mandela once said, "For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others."
That's beautiful.
Welcome to episode 12 of Our Hen House, a place to find our way to change the world for animals. In today's episode, Marianne and I will talk cupcakes.
Yo!
And we'll tell you from where and because of why we just ordered 50 of them. Then we'll discuss Jane Goodall's take on the core issue that is responsible for every injustice on the planet. Joining us today will be chef and vegan cooking school owner Christine Waltermeyer, who will share her ideas on everything from cabinet essentials to the healing properties of vegan foods. In our news section, we will discuss a very special animal sanctuary in Colombia and a Maryland lawsuit that is ruffling some feathers. Then we will talk about some very inappropriate behavior that some petty legislators displayed toward an animal activist in Missouri. Finally, we will share some LOL activism with you directly from the Gotham Comedy Club in New York City. And that's Gotham, not Gotham. My name is Jasmine Singer, and I'll be your co-host today in our hen house, along with my almost birthday girl, Marianne Sullivan.
2030?
Now, please, pull up some hay. Let's get squawking. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Marianne Sullivan.
Hello, my little cupcake.
Yes, that is what they call me.
I love that name, actually. I'm going to call you that, my little cupcake.
We just ordered 50 cupcakes for your birthday party, which is happening.
I know, and considering that they are nice cupcakes, I hope they're enough. Even just a few people come.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. The 50 cupcakes are for me. Cupcakes are my favorite food. I should say the top of cupcakes are my favorite food.
Yeah.
But Snice cupcakes are the best cupcakes out there, I think.
I really love those Snice cupcakes. Snice is a coffee shop. There's several of them.
Well,
one's in Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, and another's in Brooklyn. And the big news, ta-da-da-da-da!
They're opening one down the street from us.
Oh, my God.
It's opening like any moment now. And goodbye, life, as I knew it.
Yeah, they're totally vegetarian. They're not all vegan, but really, most of their baked goods seem to be vegan.
Yeah, I think they're like 90% vegan, and they have a certain amount of oppression, but not that much.
I think they let you have milk with your coffee. It's so stupid. Why don't they just become vegan?
Totally stupid.
Their food is really lovely, and their cupcakes are really special.
And in case you missed what I said, we're having a birthday party for you because it's going to be your birthday.
I'm trying to avoid that.
Am I allowed to say that there's a zero in your birthday?
Well, you already have.
There's a zero in it. I just had a zero birthday last year.
I hate birthdays with zeros in them.
I think they're fun. It's like a new lease on life.
Yeah, you're 30, honey.
So what?
Just wait.
It's like a new lease on life, you know? It's like
it's a new step
beginning.
Towards death.
On certain days, that sounds appealing.
Well, our neighborhood is just blossoming with vegan restaurants.
Too bad Blossom isn't.
Not a Blossom, unfortunately. There are two restaurants called Blossom in New York. But the other one is, you tell them about it.
And is it called Tiandro?
I think it's called Otarian. Where you got Tiandro, I have no idea.
Otarian, it's a vegan fast food restaurant.
It doesn't look that fast food, though. It's pretty big.
But it's fast foody in the sense that there's, like, a counter and, like, three seats in the restaurant. And it's on Bleecker and Thompson, and we live on Thompson. And that is going to be fun as well, because that will not only meet my culinary demands, but it will also meet my budgetary restraints.
Also, I think it's supposed to be very healthy.
It's not even just here, too. Remember when Eleni Vlachos was on maybe like a month ago, and she was talking about how everywhere she goes throughout the country, there's just food, really delicious food to eat. Eleni is traveling with her movie.
That would be so much fun. I would love to make that a road trip just to find vegan food.
I don't want to say this because I feel like I'm afraid someone's going to steal this idea.
You're going to give away our name.
So we kind of had a 5-minute dream at one point that after you retire, we would go on the road. We would rent out our Soho apartment for like a lot of money because it's Soho. And back when you got this apartment 20 years ago, it was not nearly as fancy schmancy as it is now. Hence, these two activists can live in Soho. We would rent out our fancy Soho neighborhood apartment. We would travel around, do writing, do workshops, write a book, get an environmentally friendly RV, a hybrid
You're
RV.
You're such a hippie, honey.
And call it our vegan.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I love that.
Our vegan.
We're probably going to end up doing it just to use the name.
I better buy ourvegan.com before. Actually, I looked into buying ourvegan.com and somebody owned it, but like not a real website, but I wasn't allowed to buy it. So we should look into that again. Yeah. And then remember we had this weird fantasy.
I love a road trip, but I like motels.
You don't like motels. You like fancy pants hotels.
I like nice motels.
Yeah, motels are good because you get the free coffee and the free Wi-Fi and the free breakfast.
Yeah, those are the kind of motels I like.
You get your white Wonder Bread with your peanut butter.
You know, somebody should do a campaign with those motels and try to get them to get a little more vegan food. You can never get soy milk. There's this huge breakfast selection and you can virtually have nothing.
And when we travel, we actually carry around this soy milk powder that we got in South Africa.
But I'm sure you can get it here too.
I know, but I just think it's a funny addition to the story that we got it in South Africa. And it works because in
it's
the
kind
hotel.
Of like, you're kind of name dropping, only you're country dropping.
Country dropping.
Oh, but I was in South Africa.
We were in South Africa last year because Marianne was speaking at an Animal Rights Africa conference. And we went there for 5 days.
Nobody in their right mind goes from New York to South Africa for 5 days.
And we found out about the trip with like 3 days in advance. So that was our whirlwind worldwide trip.
That was Africa.
That was Africa.
Check that continent off.
Check. Speaking of Africa, Jane Goodall has a very interesting article in USA Today this week.
Yeah, she didn't actually write it, but it was kind of based on an interview with her. And she, I think it was notable just because she spoke about human overpopulation mm-hmm. as being the root cause of almost everything that's wrong.
You think?
Well, not everybody does agree with that, but it just does seem undeniable. It's just, I don't know how the world's going to absorb all these people. It's just this huge science experiment to see how many people we can load on this earth. And a lot of times people make the point that people in the United States and in Western Europe and developed areas that are really using up all the resources, people in the developing world where population is increasing at the fastest rate are actually not using that many resources because those people just don't consume at the rate that we do. But the problem with that is that assumes that all of those people are going to have to stay really, really poor. Mm-hmm. The reason we use more resources, well, one is because we're careless idiots. But another is that we live lives of luxury, and that requires resources. And do we really want everybody in the developing world to have to remain poor in order for the planet to survive? That's not a very good solution.
This shack one day.
I have a few friends who have kids who are vegans. Actually, I have like 10 friends who had vegan children within the last week. I swear to God. Everyone I know just had a baby. And
what do you mean they had vegan children?
Well, I mean,
how do they know whether they're going to be vegan or not? You can't control what your child's going to eat through their whole life.
Yeah, I guess they're vegan now.
Yeah, well, most children at the age of 1 week are vegan.
It was just bizarre. Like, a bunch of friends of mine just had babies in the same week. It's like they planned it.
Yeah, it is funny.
But anyway, what I was going to say was,
let's go through their names.
I will in 1 second. What I was going to say was, one child is obviously a significantly less toll on the planet than 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 8. So the names of my friends' children, Krista just had a baby and named her Clementine.
I love that.
I love it too. Totally love it. I have another person in my life who had a baby named Swan.
Swan.
Interesting.
Interesting. I have another friend who had a baby named Anya.
Ooh, Anya.
Oh, that's a pretty name.
It's a beautiful name. And guess who that friend is?
I think it might be our guest
today.
This week.
Right? And I love that name so much. And I know someone else who just had a baby named John.
Yeah, that is great.
I love it. I just
Nobody names their kid John anymore.
I know.
Kid's going to be the only John in his school.
It's going to be so exotic.
Everybody has, like, these very crazy names now.
It's like, well, I know. And then
made up names.
Nobody was named a Jasmine when I was a kid, by the way. They all got named Jasmine after Aladdin. Or after me, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, but probably not.
Yeah, I'm sure that broke your mother's heart when that movie came out. I think she thought of this very clever name.
Probably. But speaking of Christine, Christine is indeed our first guest with her brand new addition to her life, little Anya. Such a beautiful name. And Christine, we actually met because she was my mom's cooking teacher. And she lives in...
Your mom being, of course, a vegan.
Right. Christine has a cooking school in New Jersey in Princeton. And she gives workshops all over, including in the city. And we've collaborated on a couple of events as well. And I just think that she's an incredible, incredible person. Just like Alex Jameson and myself, she's a graduate of the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. And I'm excited to talk to her about vegan nutrition.
Cool.
Christine Waltermeyer is the founder and director of the Natural Kitchen Cooking School, which you can find at naturalkitchenschool.com. With over 15 years of experience in the field of natural cooking, Christine is a masterful chef and teacher specializing in macrobiotic, vegan, and raw foods cuisines. Christine has appeared on Ebru TV's Daily Connection as a regular featured chef. Her personal chef clients have included well-known celebrities, and Christine also teaches Food for Life cooking classes at the Cancer Project. She has co-taught with legendary natural foods leader Misho Kushi at the Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Lenox, Massachusetts. Christine has also been a cooking instructor at the annual North American Vegetarian Society's Vegetarian Summerfest in Johnston, PA. Christine has taught dynamic cooking classes at Integral Yoga Institute in New York City, Dean's Natural Food Market in Ocean, New Jersey, and Whole Foods Market in Princeton, New Jersey. Christine has been the subject of numerous newspaper and magazine articles, including Princeton's US One magazine and the Asbury Park Press. Christine has written for Veg News magazine, and she is in the process of publishing her first cookbook. Christine is a graduate of Millersville University, the Cushy Institute, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, and is a member of the International Association of Culinary Professionals. Christine is a certified wellness coach through the Coach Training Alliance, and she specializes and prenatal nutrition and diets for children with special needs. It is Christine's passion to empower others with the skills and knowledge to create radiant health. Welcome, Christine, to our hen house.
Oh, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're so excited to have you. I'm a big fan of everything that you do. And
I just wish you were cooking for us.
I know. That's the only downside, that you weren't like making us some delicious food concoction as we were talking. We'll have to work on that for the next time.
Right.
So Christine is the founder and director of the Natural Kitchen Cooking School in New Jersey. Christine, how did you get started with opening your cooking school?
Gosh, it's been a long journey. I mean, I first became vegan myself 18 years ago.
Wow.
I can't believe it was been that long. And yeah. And then I became a personal chef after studying, you know, macrobiotic cooking and worked as a personal chef. And I started getting more calls than I could keep up with, and I realized that there was a growing demand for vegan and macrobiotic chefs, so I decided to open a school and train the trainer, create more leaders and chefs out there.
So when did you open your school?
Gosh, we're in our fifth year, so 5 years ago.
That's so great. And what kind of difference have you noticed within vegan food availability and vegan consciousness in the last 18 years?
It's definitely growing. I think there's much more consciousness, much more awareness. The ingredients are more available. Heard that it's really a big growing trend, especially among college-age students.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear of a lot of young people going vegan these days.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've seen that as well. And I've only been vegan for about half the time you've been vegan, a little less actually. And I just even noticed a difference from a few years ago, the amount of vegan options available at mainstream restaurants, for example. So that's really cool.
Now,
when you're grocery shopping, what do you look for first? And what are some of your cabinet essentials in the Christine Waltermeyer household?
Yes. Well, if refrigerator is included, I definitely stock up on lots of fresh produce. That's really my main food group, is lots of fresh vegetables, especially dark leafy greens. Mm-hmm. Then as far as like pantry items, I store lots of whole grains like brown rice and barley, things like that. Dried beans, sea vegetables. I'm a big fan of sea vegetables. They're really rich in minerals. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, nuts, seeds, dried fruits. I could go on and on.
Yeah. Well, you're making me hungry as you're going on and on. So what is it about dark leafy greens? Because I know I try and get my kale when I can, and kale is my personal favorite dark leafy green. But what are the nutrients in dark leafy greens that makes it so important for people to have them?
Yeah, great question. Calcium, they're a great source of calcium. So, you know, instead of getting our calcium from milk, we can get it from leafy greens. You know, there's no reason to have dairy products in our diet when you can just eat leafy greens and get the same amount of calcium and magnesium. So they're really great for our bones and our teeth.
Well, that explains part of why you can do just as well on a vegan diet as you can on a meat and dairy-based diet. But tell us about the advantages, why a vegan diet is so much better.
Yes, well, I personally noticed that my skin cleared up. I always had skin problems, a lot of acne, and when I switched over to a vegan diet, concentrating on the whole fresh vegetables instead of processed foods, my skin cleared up.
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe she's vegan.
My nails even got stronger. My immunity got better. I wasn't getting colds and the flu and ear infections like I used to. No stomach ache, no headaches. I really just got healthier. And I've even worked with clients who've recovered from serious illnesses like stage 4 cancer. I have one client who recovered on a macrobiotic diet, which is a vegan diet, except some people include fish once a week, but you don't have to. You can have a vegan diet.
Oh, I didn't realize that macrobiotic didn't have to include the fish. That's great to know.
Yeah. A lot of people follow that diet, and it's a vegan diet if you don't go for the fish. So, but yeah, this guy recovered from stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and his oncologist, Sloan Kettering, still says, you know, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. So it is miraculous what food can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever been to Suwen in New York?
I love Suwen.
Yeah. There's one right down the street from us. It's quite delicious. We just had our Vega this morning. We just had our Vega shake that we have in the morning.
With loads of dark leafy greens and berries.
Wow, so healthy.
Yeah, unfortunately, the rest of our day is frequently not as healthy as our breakfast.
Goes downhill.
And I think that's one of the facts that gets people confused about the healthiness of a vegan diet, that with all the growth of veganism and all of the kind of junk food, vegan food, which, you know, God bless it because it's saving animals, but still, it's not necessarily a healthy diet. We have to make that separation between a healthy vegan diet and a more junky vegan diet, or as most people follow, something in between.
I prefer all junk food myself.
For sure. And that's why I even wrote a cookbook, which will be coming out, due to be published in the summer.
Wow, I didn't know that. Congratulations.
Yes, thanks. I'm very excited. Rory Friedman actually wrote the foreword to it. So
skinny bitch.
I'm excited. But that really promotes a very natural, wholesome version of a vegan diet. Because you're right, it's very easy, and I was doing it in the beginning myself, to be a junk food vegan, where you're just living on like white sugar and things like that, and then you just feel really off balance, and then a lot of people throw in the towel because they feel tired, and it was really only when I switched over to eating whole grains and fresh vegetables and beans where I really felt that it was much healthier than the standard American diet.
Standard American diet, or SAD, very sad diet. I actually definitely could use to be a little bit healthier, but I feel like the main place where I get stuck is with snack foods because I just want to like grab something. I yesterday did pretty well. I had a bunch of a package of figs with me, and I had an orange with me. What are your favorite snack foods?
Ooh, I love to munch on trail mix. So I'll make a little mixture. In fact, I just made some homemade granola where I mix up some oats and brown rice syrup, and I combine it with some walnuts, which are a great source of those healthy omega-3 fats, and some dried apricots. So things like that I can just grab Luna bars are always convenient, and they're just basically dates and nuts. You know, cut up vegetables, crudités, cut up fruit like apples. I try to go for, you know, whole food snacks rather than too many packaged things.
Yeah, and if you take any whole food thing and you, like, cut it up, it somehow becomes snack-like. You just have to change the presentation of it a little.
That's right.
So do you have any success stories of people who were exposed to vegan food through you and then ultimately went vegan?
Yes. I have some personal chef clients I've worked with where, you know, the family was skeptical, and then, you know, after trying the food, they gradually switched over. So I have seen that happen.
Yay.
And then I have a lot of clients and students who are almost there. You know, and it is a gradual process for some people. They can't do it overnight. And I still feel like they're successful. It's just that they're doing it more gradually. Or even if they've cut way down and they're like 98% there, it's still saving animals' lives.
Absolutely. We have a friend who says personal growth is a process, not an event, which I like a lot.
Yeah, that's nice.
I think particularly changing diet is very difficult. And also the older you get, the harder it is. A lot of teenagers, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, they can go vegan overnight because kids are just like that.
But
adults get set in their ways, and change can be very difficult.
And then if people feel like they have to do it 100% or not at all, sometimes they'll just throw the whole thing out the window. So I'd rather see someone at least be 98% there, you know, make it a gradual thing.
Absolutely. Oh, my God, we're talking at the same time now. So weird.
So this is actually the question I've been waiting to ask you. What's your favorite recipe?
It's hard to pick, but I really enjoy millet mashed potatoes. It might sound a little like, what the heck is that? But you're actually just taking a grain called millet and cooking it with cauliflower, and then you just mash it up at the end just like you would mash potatoes, and you can add some garlic or parsley and top it off with a nice vegan gravy. And who doesn't love mashed potatoes? And then you're getting the benefits of a grain and the cruciferous vegetables.
Well, I can attest that I actually went to a demonstration by Christine last year, and she made those mashed potatoes, and they were fabulous.
Amazing.
Not mashed, quote-unquote, potatoes, because they're not
millet. You're right.
It's not really potatoes.
Not really potatoes.
Your cooking school is in Princeton, do you do workshops all over the place and take clients from all over the place? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, we actually have our chef training program offered in 3 locations next year. So Princeton, New Jersey at the Whole Foods Market.
New Jersey is so multifaceted.
And then also the Lower East Side of Manhattan at Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. And then we're doing a 3rd location next year in Haddonfield. So we'll reach the Philadelphia, Cherry Hill area crowd.
Very cool. Well, keep us posted on the one on the Lower East Side. That's not too far from us at all. Any excuse to, you know, be exposed to a little bit of Christine wisdom would be just fine with me. So thank you so much. We're excited about trying the. You sent us the recipe, and we'll post it to our blog as well for the millet. For the what do you call it? Millet mash.
Millet mash.
It sounds like a dance from 1985. I'll do the millet mash. Oh, wait, that's the monster mash.
That was not 1985.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I probably became exposed to it in 1985. But anyway, so we're going to post it to our website, and then I'm going to make it, in fact.
Wow.
And yay.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Yeah, it is. I do most of the cooking around here, but usually it only involves the stovetop. There's too many pots and pans in the oven. You have to take them all out, put them on the couch. It's a small apartment.
Aww,
anyway, so I look forward to trying that. And
I can't wait to get the cookbook.
The cookbook, I know. I didn't even know that. That is so cool. That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited.
And keep us posted on that, and we'll send out an announcement about that, too. And of course, thank you for everything that you're doing for the animals, because the best way to advocate for animals is to provide delicious vegan food, which is something that you are doing quite well.
Thanks. I totally agree. So thanks so much, Marianne and Jasmine.
Thank you for coming and being part of our hen house today, Christine.
Thank you.
I'm excited about her book. I didn't even know about that.
I know. I love her cooking, and I'm really looking forward to getting that cookbook.
It's really tasty, but it feels... and it's very healthy and healthful, but it feels really decadent at the same time, which is exactly what I think we should all aspire to be eating.
Yeah, it's
very high-end, very natural, but kind of comfort food almost.
Right, exactly. The name of her cookbook is going to be The Natural Vegan Kitchen, which I love that name that she just got vegan right in there.
I know. Well, you know, I've heard that vegan is a good selling point these days. We're so in.
We're so in. Thank you, Ellen. By the way.
Yeah, seriously.
And, of course, her name is Christine Waltermeyer. The foreword is by the skinny bitch herself, Rory Friedman.
Well, that's a great selling point.
Yeah.
The publishing company is Book Publishing Company, creative book publishing title.
Book publishing company.
They were like, let's name our book publishing company.
I hesitate to trust the creativity of that organization.
Actually,
but maybe it's clever. We're talking about it.
No, but you know, in addition to that, Christine said that it was the publishers who were the ones that were really pushing her to put the word vegan in the title. So go book publishing.
Wow, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
I know it's going to press in July, and you could, I'm sure, get updates about the book on Christine's website, which is www.naturalkitchenschool.com. And you could also find out about her cooking classes and all of the demonstrations she does throughout New Jersey and New York and the area.
I think she's just an amazing model for anybody who's a great cook, interested in healthy food, and wanting to start that business that's going to spread veganism and help the animals.
Yeah, I love that she went ahead and did that and just turned her passion and her skill set into, and her talents, into a business and into not only a way of advocating for animals. I mean, you could see from the interview that that's what she's very passionate about, but also just a way to sustain herself. And she's a true entrepreneur. She also has a chef training program, and the website is nkchef.com. So we're excited to have talked to Christine, and let's get into some news now, shall we?
Yeah.
So what's been going on in Maryland?
Yeah, this story really disturbed me. There's a story, it was in the Washington Post and I think the Baltimore Sun this week, about this stuff going on at the University of Maryland. The law school there has a clinic, as most law schools do. I mean, most law schools have a lot of clinics where students kind of work, and the clinic operates kind of as a public interest law firm. And this is the environmental law clinic, and these clinics have gotten into trouble before with legislators and the public about the unpopularity sometimes of the cases they're bringing, particularly sometimes to big business. And this one involves chickens, which is why it struck me. They are representing the Assateague Coastal Trust, which is suing a chicken farmer, a family farmer in the Delmarva Peninsula, for fouling the waters. I think it's the Pocomoke River. And the legislature is, or at least some people in the legislature, are screaming loud and hard that they're going after small farmers. And this is the irony of it all. What they're really trying to do is sue this farmer but hold Purdue liable, since, like many small farmers in that area, they are contractors to Purdue. That's how a lot of these big factory farm operations work. They contract the work out to these small farmers, and then they forego any liability. They just dump all the liability and all the responsibility onto the small farmers, who I have no personal sympathy for, because what they're doing is pretty disgusting. Purdue, I'm sure, pretty much owns a number of legislators in the Maryland legislature. I would have no doubt of that. And has been claiming this is the biggest threat to agriculture in the past 50 years. Yeah, it's the biggest threat to Jim, actually.
I've actually been to the Delmarva Peninsula area, and it's unbelievable. Like, everywhere you turn, there's poultry production happening. You pass factory farms left and right. There's transport trucks all over the place. I saw the Purdue factory.
Yeah, it's a hideous place.
Yeah.
It's the Delmarva Peninsula of death.
Yeah, no kidding. It's too bad.
Yeah, the legislature is really going after the university and threatening to withhold funding and demanding the names of all of the clients in the past 2 years of this clinic, which is really, I think, a violation of the attorney-client privilege.
What else is going on in the news?
Well, actually, another story about chickens, which I know this sounds ridiculous, but it kind of made me hopeful. There was a very nice editorial in the, I think it's ridiculous to be hopeful, a very nice editorial in the Toledo Blade, which is, I think is a reasonably leading Ohio newspaper.
More Ohio news. We do Ohio like every
week.
Yeah,
well, there's a lot going on in Ohio. But this was an anti-battery cage editorial, which is in and of itself exciting news that a major newspaper or a semi-major newspaper would editorialize about battery cages and about farm animals. But they were, if you recall, issue 2 last year in Ohio mm-hmm. set up this farm animal standards board that is meant to, well, is purportedly meant to set up standards for the care of livestock, but actually is meant to prevent standards for the care of livestock because it's all full of industry
bullshit.
Representatives. Yeah, exactly. And so this editorial was calling on that livestock standards board to set some good standards for battery for laying hens. And I thought this was kind of a cool development because as bad as issue 2 was and as bad as that commission is, at least finally somebody's kind of in charge. And once somebody's in charge, you can make demands on them and watch what they're doing and see whether it's bad. So I think I've always thought that the next step in our process for taking care of farm animals on a legal basis would be bad laws. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have no laws pretty much now, except in a few places. And the next thing will be bad laws. So I would say having bad laws is just the most likely thing that we'll get from having no laws at all.
Yeah. In other news, did you see that article from the Times earlier this week, which was really just very sad and heartwarming?
About a woman in Colombia who's set up a rescue operation, a sanctuary for, and she has an amazing assortment of animals. It's mostly for exotic animals, and some of them, she had started when she was getting some from the circuses, and then she's gotten an enormous number of animals from drug lords. You know, they frequently have these menageries, and she's taken in this crazy array of animals. She seems like just a remarkable person, and there are big cats and other very large, charismatic megafauna, and loads of primates, and some, they have such sad histories. There's one lion who is continually kind of dazed and out of it, and he apparently was fed drugs regularly. And one of the other nice things I noticed about it is that the way she mentioned that she feeds them, I don't know whether this is all of them, but she tries to feed them because, of course, keeping big cats, you have to feed them meat. And she gets roadkill. She has a number of people who deliver roadkill to her. Yeah. And so she's apparently trying as hard as she can not to actually kill other animals to feed these animals.
She had some really inspiring quotes that I liked. I'm trying to find it. Some of the cruelties I've seen make me ashamed to be a human being.
And another thing I like about her is that she's really running a sanctuary.
Yeah, not
a
zoo.
It's not a zoo.
She's not letting people in. She says the animals here are not meant to be exhibited. And she also says they need to be protected and have a right to live in peace.
It's funny because it's hard for me to imagine the New York Times writing an article like that about somebody who's opposed to ringling or anything in the United States. But when it's in another country, somehow people's minds can be a little bit more open to the plight of animals.
And that was our news. There are certain things that if they happen to an animal rights activist, if the animal rights activist did it, that animal rights activist would be in jail. But somebody else can get away with it, like, oh, say, a legislator, and it just is a funny news story.
So you're talking about Missouri.
I am.
Yeah, I'm so furious about this. It's a kinship circle story. I'm sure that most people know Kinship Circle. Mm-hmm. It's a huge letter-writing, great organization, huge letter-writing campaign organization. They find issues of interest and encourage people to write letters on behalf of the animals to various legislators or other people. And there was a letter-writing campaign in Missouri about the proposal currently in the legislature to build a horse slaughter plant in Missouri.
they would have to permit horse slaughter, since it's not permitted at the current time. And so millions, well, not millions, thousands of people wrote from all over the world, probably mostly in the United States, and these legislators were furious, furious that people had filled up their email boxes. Mm-hmm. And actually harassed Brenda Schaus, who is the leader of Kinship Circle. They made calls to her in the middle of the night in what they thought was a very humorous fashion. One sang the Mr. Ed theme song. They made neighing sounds. These are Missouri legislators that were angry that people had written to them about a possible law. I mean, what else is one supposed to do when someone wants legislators to do something? They complain that animal rights activists take poor tactics. Well, what's a better tactic than having people write to legislators?
And I just hope that this story gets big enough that more and more people realize what's wrong.
Well, I know she filed a complaint with the police department there, but it seems to me that her First Amendment rights have been pretty seriously violated. I mean, it's not like situations, you know, when in days gone by when people had fax machines, they would send black faxes, have people send black faxes to run the fax machine out of ink or something.
I didn't even know about that.
Oh, yeah, that's an oldie but a goodie. But those are real harassment techniques and certainly arguably improper. This was having individuals, these emails came from all from different individuals writing because they cared about it and because too many people cared about it. Mm. These legislators were angry. Well, God forbid a lot of people should care about something.
But in much other news, which is not really news at all, We went to see a comedy show called Comedy for Karma, which was to benefit the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. And it was like at the Gotham Comedy Club, and it was all of these comedians, and it was a big fundraiser for the sanctuary. The only thing that I was gravely disappointed with was the fact that they didn't poke fun at the fact that it was the Gotham Comedy Club. Got ham.
Yeah, I must say that didn't occur to me or to anybody else but you, and I can see why. It's pretty stupid.
I gotta agree with the lawyer.
Yeah, it's funny. I had a good time. One of the comedians was one who I've heard of before. Well, I heard of several of them, but this one particular one was one that other people have told me that we should really keep our eye out for, and his name is Mike Kaplan, but he spells Mike M-Y-Q.
Yeah, that's a little odd.
It is a little odd. He's a little odd, but he was vegan.
Yeah, he was vegan, so that was nice. And he was funny.
He was funny guy.
The tall one was funny.
The tall one was Gary Goldman. He was hilarious.
Yeah, he was very funny. I'm not a huge fan of stand-up, I must say.
No, you always seem to feel somewhat manipulated when you're at stand-up. Like, you have to laugh or someone's going to yell at you or something like that. And you also brought up the fact tonight that it's probably more fun to see stand-up if you're, like, piss-ass drunk, which is probably true.
Yeah, I did notice that the ones who came on later got bigger laughs, and I didn't think they were any funnier, but then I was sober.
They would have laughed even more if somebody had made the got ham joke, like made some kind of joke about that.
Yeah, it's really a shame that didn't come up. That. Yeah.
I'll have to let them know for next time. But I did want to say that the fact that this was a big fundraiser for Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary at a big comedy club in New York City is really cool. It's just a really good form of creative advocacy. And this is something that we've blogged about on our hen house, the blog. And we've talked about the fact that people really can create awareness and money for the movement in a variety of different ways. Comedy, of course, being one of them. And you have fulfilled your comedy obligation of the year, so you should be happy too.
Thank God. No more laughing for me.
Speaking of laughing, you're not going to be laughing next week because we're going to be seeing a Broadway play that is not a comedy. It's one of your birthday gifts.
Well, that sounds exciting.
You want to hear what it is?
No, I want it to be a surprise.
I wanted to tell you on our podcast. All right. We're going to see the new play Red with Alfred Molina.
Oh, great.
You're looking at me like you have no idea what it is. I sent you a description of it, and I said, does this look good to you? And you said, yes. And I said, oh, well, good.
Well, that's exciting.
It is exciting. I'm excited. It looks absolutely amazing.
I remember when we were in Midtown last week with your grandma, she said, oh, I heard that play Red was very good.
She didn't even say it because she knew either, by the way.
Yeah, well, I would never say, your grandmother would not be so manipulative.
No, but if she tried to be, she would say it like overacting. Like she would say, oh, that play, Red, is supposed to be really good. Wonderful. I hear it's wonderful. That's how she would say it.
We find out how she says it anyway.
We got to get her on. We have to get her on our podcast like ASAP. So next week I will be in Cortland, New York for the Institute for Critical Animal Studies conference where I'm giving a presentation called Why Animal Rights is Central to Social Justice.
Rose and I will be in Soho.
I'm giving the workshop alongside Matt Rice of Mercy for Animals, and I worked with Matt when we were both at Farm Sanctuary. So I'm looking forward to that and to going to upstate New York. So if anyone's coming, come say hello. And I guess that's it for our podcast today. So we hope that you visit our website, www.ourhenhouse.com. Become our fan on Facebook. We love our Facebook fans very much. We say goodnight to each of you and every one of you every single day before we go to bed. That's not true. But we do like you very much. Email us at info@ourhenhouse.com. Let us know what your story is. Keep us posted on your happenings. And don't be a stranger. Take care.